Would you guys like to discuss the movies that we talked about on the podcast, recommend movies for future episodes, or maybe even watch movies with us? Check out the Discord.
You can find the Discord on the latest episodes or on the website, theotherhalfpodcast.com. We're just hanging out chatting.
And while you're there, maybe also check out the second of the Discord, which is specifically for Ethan's streams on Twitch. You get updates as to when he goes live. Just keep up to date with us, with Ethan, the podcast, and the stream.
It's also totally okay if you just want to hang out and talk about the podcast. You could hang out there and maybe we'll see you there and watch a movie or something.
Or maybe you're like, wow, these streams are so much better, and you just totally ignore the podcast. That's also another option.
That could happen.
Why not?
The Discord is your oyster. Come join us.
The Discord is your oyster. Join it. Hey, I'm Mike.
Hey, I'm Ethan.
Hi, I'm Honeybees.
I watched the first half of Maria.
I watched the second half of Maria.
And I watched all of Maria.
And this is the other half. Welcome to our final episode of the Women's History Month film series, where we're discussing Maria, the newly released Netflix produced film from the same director as Jackie, and oh my gosh, what was the other one
Spencer
that we watched for this Spencer? Yes, this is his the last part of his trilogy, where he discusses Maria, a world-renowned opera singer performing Angelina Jolie, whom I have never heard of.
I never heard of either.
As Faye Dunaway said, he liked to make this trilogy about women who left their mark.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, that's the thing.
Truly.
So I may not be familiar because I'm just not a big opera person, but like I went to Wikipedia and I was like, oh shit, this is long. It is
her
long.
Wikipedia is so long.
It's amazing. It's like literally like this is the range of notes she could hit, and it like had a piano, and it's like it's like almost the whole piano. It's like not the whole piano, but it's like really close, and it's like just showing like examples of that is nuts.
I actually had the Wikipedia open while I was watching the movie just to like kind of cross reference, and it was exactly that. I was right. Like, it wasn't like it has literal sections. This era of her life, this era of her life, and for someone who only lived to be like 50 something, it's like her fans like really like. I mean, there have been books about her, and you know, there's a famous play called Masterclass about Maria Callas, that she would go to Juilliard and give masterclasses, and she would have the students in tears because she was so brutally honest. She was so frank because she had lived this life of, what do they call her? Like El Diva. She is like,
yeah. La Diva.
Yeah.
I think it's also because she held herself to such a high standard. There's one scene in the movie that I adore, which I'll discuss later on, where someone puts on a record of hers and she can't stand to listen to it. She hates it. She wants them to turn it off, even though it sounds so beautiful. And she says, you know, real art shouldn't be perfect every single time. It should be different depending on the room that you're in. It should be an expression of one's own self in the space that you're in. And it's like, God damn, like what? Like you can't even listen to your own self, who's like, she was one of the greatest fucking vocalists of her time. It's like she can't even listen to herself and her perfection, because she's like, that's not what art is. Like the thing she's after, which is, you see this so often, I think, in many movies about artists, is they hold themselves up to such an absurdly high standard that they end up like driving themselves fucking bananas.
And
you know,
and that's essentially what this movie is like a fictionalized, possibly, what was the last week of her life like? And it was kooky crazy.
it was insanity. Yeah, it was her just being hopped up on medication and talking to herself, basically, and surrounded by, you know, the handful of people that could basically stand to spend time with her.
Yeah,
the people that she was paying.
Is Cody Smith McPhee, is he a real person?
No,
he's fake.
All right, he's got to be.
He's the personification of the medication that she's taking.
So they show that she takes a medication called Mandrax, which is essentially Quaaludes. Okay. And his name is Mandrax, and he's interviewing her in her head.
Okay. Got it. So well, because he just like fades away at the end, and I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Oh, this is my favorite part of this podcast.
It helps for me because I don't know anything already, and then seeing the second half, I'm just like, oh boy, I really got to buckle down. And I went over my notes a couple times because I was just like, I want to make sure what I'm seeing is making sense, because so much of it is very ethereal and
very dreamlike.
Dreamlike, but also feels very grounded at the same time. Like, this is a real account for her. I think the most dreamlike is probably the way the movie plays with time and memory. And, and honestly, what's the Anthony Hopkins movie? The Father?
The Father. Father. Yeah, I was thinking The Father as well.
It reminded me a lot
yeah.
of that. Where
I haven't seen that movie, but I know it's about someone with like dementia or something like that and how they like process the thoughts. And, you know, that's what I think he was going for here, where Jackie is about Jackie Onassis giving, which is interesting because their lives are parallel. Maria's husband left her.
That was crazy.
Jackie. Yeah.
That was crazy. When you see motherfucking JFK again from the...
Played by the same actor.
The same actor as Jackie.
The multiverse.
It's the only guy. It's the only guy you can get for JFK. He's still working to this day.
And so, like, Jackie is about a woman who is giving it... I think it's like she's giving an interview, you know, the first interview after her husband's death. And then Spencer is about... fucking Diana spending Christmas with a bunch of people who hate her, the royal family. This is an interesting take. I personally think, like, this idea of, like, what was it like in the last week of her death? Because she died at 53. She was young. And she was the diva. Like, and this is what became of the diva, you know?
What I like about this movie, too, compared to the earlier films as well, is, like, those movies decided, particularly Jackie, decided to, like, even Spencer is like, let's tell a story based on this one moment in her life. Like, it is centered around one important, like, literally, like, Spencer was, like, basically the end of her life. Jackie was the end of her marriage. This is like, let's talk about the last moments of her life, but also have her reflect on the entirety of her life. So it's really biting off a lot. Like, we get a lot of shots of, like, her when, you know, she first got started. There's, like, a horrifying moment at the beginning of the movie when, you know, you see a young version of her. She's a lot bigger. She's singing for, like, Nazi, you know, officers.
For, like, fascists.
For fascists. Yeah. In Italy during World War II. And it's just like, Jesus fucking Christ. But it's like, it's only sort of like, it's so dreamlike that you're just sort of like, is she like hallucinating? Is this real? And then, like, the more you watch, the more you're like, oh shit. Like, this is why she has such a skewed idea of, like, art and life and singing, is because, you know, basically what her mom put her through, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, I just was looking up while you were talking. I'm shocked to find out that the director...
I wasn't listening while you were talking.
No, I was listening while you were talking, but I was shocked to...
I'm just kidding.
I was shocked to learn. I was like, wait, is this man a homosexual? And he's not. And
what?
I think that's kind of fabulous that this Pablo Larraín is, like, obsessed with these women who left their mark. Because I thought, oh, at least he's a gay man.
Maybe this is like me learning that Baz Luhrmann is not gay. Like, I was just like... When I discovered that Baz Luhrmann is, like, a happily married man with a wife, I'm just like, what in the fuck is going on? How can someone who made something like Moulin Rouge,
possibly, like, be straight? I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I am. I'm the reason you watch these movies, because they would never enter your life in any
way.
It was a great suggestion.
I would say this entire month is all due to Honeybees. Honeybees is the one that was telling us you should really do a series on these movies by this specific director.
Well, yeah, I mean, so the thing was, I watched this movie. I was looking forward to it. I love Angelina's performance. I think she was snubbed, but, like, I was like, you know what? Like, if you haven't seen the Jackie or Spencer either, like, they're worth watching, in my opinion, because...
Definitely.
This director does have a really interesting point of view. He is a very interesting style. And, I mean, as I said, she was snubbed, but, like, Jackie got a nomination, Spencer got a nomination. So I thought, like, when I told you, I was like, this is going to get a nomination, but...
Yeah, no. Well, let's discuss a little bit about the movie and figure out what the fuck happened and how they could possibly have snubbed Angelina Jolie. Because I agree with you. I think her performance in this movie was fucking fantastic. She really disappeared in her role.
Has she ever really gone for an Oscar before, besides obviously the movie Wanted, where she was
when she was I wanted that Oscar.
She's an Oscar winner for Girl Interrupted.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah,
okay.
And, you know, and that's what I think about her performance in this. It's so different to me, because then after that, she's done all these weird action movies and, you know, Tomb Raider.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Exactly. And, like, this is her coming back to, like, and it's a side of Angelina that I hadn't seen before, that, in my opinion. Yeah. She's fabulous. I once saw her in person in New Orleans.
What?
back in 2007, and we were walking through the, you know, the French district, and there were all these reporters with cameras, and I was like, I'm 22 or whatever, and I go up and I'm like, who are you waiting for? And the guy just goes, Angelina Jolie. And at that moment, she comes out of this gallery, and she was beautiful. Like, I only saw her for half a second because she went to her SUV and they all chased her away.
Right.
But like, she's flawless looking in person. And she had little, one of her children, Shiloh. And it was just like, that moment I became an Angelina stan.
Just in that one half a second when you got to see her.
It wasn't the Korn music video she was in? Okay.
No.
Well, speaking of Korn and Angelina Jolie, I will say, I loved her in this movie. I thought her performance was immaculate and beautiful and fantastic. I cannot say enough great things about her when she is speaking. But dear Lord, when she sings, it is the most obvious lip sync I've ever seen in my fucking life. And it never looks good.
You know, it's funny because that was the whole thing that they were, this might be what cost her it, that they were really pushing this story that she spent like 7 months learning to like lip sync and, you know, maybe sing opera. I don't know. Yeah. And so a lot of people probably agreed with that. I'm less picky.
For those people who cannot see Honeybees, they just shrugged their shoulders. Like, couldn't give less of a fuck.
Didn't bother me. This is Honeybees. Like, this is fake. Doesn't matter. It's a fake movie. It's fine.
To quote Maria herself in this movie, my life is opera, and opera doesn't make sense. So I was like, whatever. She's lip syncing, whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
To quote Maria in this movie, what is real and what is not real is my business. So the movie begins on September 16th, 1977. A murder has occurred, possibly. The camera sort of reveals a body that is covered under a sheet. It's all very mysterious. The camera work is very like mannered and controlled, and clearly like a Steadicam. Feels almost like ghostly as we see like cops and doctors and police people and all sorts of people standing around the body. And then this woman comes in and has explained to her what's going on, but we can't hear her because she's so far away. And we're just sort of like going like, what the fuck is going on? What is happening? It's all very solemn, very slow. And then we see a montage of Maria's life as an opera singer. We see her singing on stage. It's all shot. And this reminded me a lot of Jackie, where they do a lot of trying to replicate the look of old film in order to set us in a specific time.
Yeah.
The aspect ratio changes. I'm sure you see it in your half of the movie too, Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so bad at picking that up. I would love to know, like, point it out when it happens. I'm curious because
some of it's pretty obvious because it's shot even like on old, like cracky film, like, or is that it's at least processed at least to look like it's like shot that. On old.
Oh yeah, those moments.
Yeah, exactly.
From real life,
those
to
moments.
The cracky film. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so we see that. We see her singing opera. Well, we see her lip syncing opera. And in black and white, we
this
see
is
her.
Your, this people... is your boom microphone moment where, like, the boom microphone's in the background, and it's always going to bother you.
They keep coming back to her, and it's, like, a full-on, like, face, you know? It's, like, it's sort of like if you watch someone trying to, like, play the guitar, and you look at their hands, and they're not strumming at the right time, you know? It's, like, those sorts of moments. Like, even, like, because it was bothering me because I was watching it, and I'm just like, why does this feel fake to me? Like, because I don't want to feel like this is fake. It is taking me out of the movie. What is, am I being too overly critical?
I'm going to be brave. Botox. This is the problem with Hollywood is, you know, I love Angelina. I'm sure it's all natural, but, like, there is something that you lose when you, especially singing, because it takes muscle and stuff. And she looks flawless. I mean, there's cheekbones and stuff. She looks flawless. So I wouldn't be shocked if it's a mixture of things to make you, you know, a touch of the needle, as they say.
Honeybees, that was very brave of you. Yeah, I just want to say.
When this comes out.
I was going to say, the Other Half podcast does not condone anything said by their guests.
Allegedly.
What I think it is too is, and again, like, again, I think I'm being very critical because later on we see a scene where the younger version of her is singing. And I'm like, oh, yes, this is obviously this actor singing. And I think what it is the breathing. I think that Angelina Jolie is never breathing in the way that a opera singer should be breathing in the moment. Like, you know, it's a very subtle thing. You see it in animation too, where like animation, when you're animating a character, doesn't really come to life unless you add in the character's like breaths. You add them like their you know, the way that they're actually like able to breathe, basically. And I think that's also the other thing that's sort of killing this look. I'm not going to bring it up too much more often, but I just wanted to mention in this moment, because it's also a close-up shot of her face singing. We see her, we see an old man on a boat. We see that there's not a lot of people that seem to be very happy with her. I don't really know what's going on in these moments. I'm sure they'll be established later on. The old man in the boat, I learn later on, is Onassis. And then we also see her burning her dresses. It was a flashback of her burning all of her opera dresses in a big fire. And she's sitting there on the ground, huddled in a fetal position. And then we cut to it's not even a chapter yet. It's just the title card, Maria. And it's on like a little clapboard.
At this point, she was, and they kind of maybe say, they do say this in the movie, that she was a recluse. She had retreated to Paris. She had isolated herself completely. She had lost her husband. I mean, her rich, rich husband to Jackie Kennedy. She had lost her voice, and she was a drug addict. Essentially, that's what they're portraying her as. She was addicted to these pills. And clearly, the last two people in her life, because I'm not going to say that third one because I think it's a dream. The last two people in her life are her servants, who she pays, and they're just watching her. You know, they love her so much, though. That's what they. We'll get to that later. They love her so much.
Yeah, no, it's really tragic seeing them, because it's like, I think it's sort of cynical to go like they only care about her because, you know, she pays them. But especially like her butler, like it's clear that it's hurting him to see her doing this to herself. And he's doing so much to try to make sure that she can continue to live. He calls the doctor on her. He like monitors the medication that she's taking, and she's every step of the way is like critical of him for doing this. She calls him crooked. But then there's also this really great moment at the beginning of the movie when she wakes up and she talks to the butler. The butler is moving the piano around her apartment. This giant grand piano, he's moving it around.
Sure, and, does that a lot.
He does that a lot. And she's like, that must hurt your back. Your back must be in pain from it. And he's just like, well, you told me to do it, so I've been doing it. And she goes, well, you know, there are times when you shouldn't do what I ask you to do. And it's this sort of thing where even inside she's like, continue to question me, continue to go against my wills, because you must know better than I do. But she's such a, and this is the other thing I love about this performance, is Angelina Jolie is so fucking like fabulous in this movie. The way she speaks, the way she talks, the movie does a good job of portraying her as like obviously a person who's in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like it does a good job of balancing it out, where it's like you feel bad for her, but also she's so good at carrying herself and speaking.
And here's
like,
here's the secret that Maria learned at the end of her life. You only need one person to be a diva around. She had two. Mm-hmm. But like that's what they're saying. It's like for the masses she was the diva, but like it was too much. It destroyed her. I also take the whole piano pushing as like a metaphorical Sisyphean act.
Oh, 100%.
That she's actually inflicting on her butler, but it really represents, when will we play the piano so she can sing?
Yeah, and it's never in the right place, because if it was in the right place, then she would be allowed to sing finally. Mm-hmm. But it's too painful for her. But she does sing in front of her maid, the cook. She goes up to the cook and says that she saw her dead husband last night.
Is that Bruna?
Came to her. Bruna is the cook, yes. Her dead husband came to her in a dream, and the cook's like, you know, the doctor's coming today. And she's just like, oh, okay, whatever, whatever. And then she's like, may I please sing for you? And she starts to sing for her in the kitchen as if she were on stage. She even imagines herself on stage. The camera cuts back and forth between her performing opera on stage for a giant, adoring audience, and then cuts back to her, and she's just sort of standing in the kitchen. And it's so great because they keep cutting back to the maid, the cook, and she's just making an omelet, like loudly making food in front of her. And then when she's done, the cook says, that was magnificent. And they cut back to her, and you can see it means so much to her to hear that form of adulation coming from someone, even though later on, and again, this is such a tragic moment, is later on she keeps looking back at this moment. And even though in this moment it means so much to her, later on she's like, I've taught this girl everything that she knows about, you know, opera. I pay her. Clearly this praise means nothing. Like, clearly it's, you know, clearly it's false. Like, clearly it shouldn't mean this much to me, but it does in this moment. Mm-hmm. It does. Maria tells her butler that a camera crew is coming to the house. Oh my God, this scene was gorgeous. She comes into her this room and she's doing makeup in front of this big like teal window, and it's like the lighting in this, the color, like the film stock they used in this movie is fucking gorgeous. Like every window looks like this like tealish greenish blue, and it's so beautiful and tragic. Oh my yeah, God, this scene was so overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean it's the vanity, you know, literally the vanity, and she's in front of it. I will never know what it's like to be that level of diva, you know?
And yeah,
we can only hope.
And when I was, I meant to say this earlier, but like when I was in my teens, I would go to the Borders and Books and I would go to the vocalist section. I would be like, who do I want to learn about? Because I'm a gay person. Mm. And that's how I learned about Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli. I would literally just buy the album. They used to do this back in the day.
And right, right, right.
I will never forget picking up the Best of Maria Callas CD that I owned and coming home and listening to aria after aria after aria and just being like, I don't know what this woman's saying. I read all the liner notes to give me like context to certain songs. I don't know what this woman's saying, but her voice is a level of God. And yeah. There's this famous, I wish I could find it. There's this famous video of near the end of her career, I think she was singing somewhere, and there's all these 1960s and maybe 1950s even gay men waiting outside the theater in like coats, and it's cold and they're interviewing, and pardon the accent I'm about to do, but it's like, he's like, I'm just here because I need to hear Maria Callas. Her voice is the voice of God. And it's like, maybe it's a dog whistle that only appeals to like the homosexual. But this woman was making gays happy. Like, yeah. Yeah.
So in a moment when they weren't happy. Exactly. They needed it, goddammit.
And so,
yeah.
And so a straight man goes and is like, I should make a movie about that.
Because yeah. maybe the dog whistle hit him. But like,
yeah,
if you're an opera lover, there's a reason why
yeah.
the diva exists. And this is why he's yeah. paying homage. But in this kind of strange way, in his way of being like, here's what I think the end of her life was like.
And it's a beautiful moment. And you mentioned vanity, and it's actually interesting because, yeah, it's like her vanity is facing this giant fucking window. And so it's like natural light is hitting her and the false vanity light is hitting her. And I'm like, this is not probably the best place to be doing like your makeup.
You're testing your interior lights or testing your exterior lights. You got it
at the same time.
Yeah.
And so her butler comes in and she says to the butler, like, a camera crew is coming in about an hour and a half. And already he smelled bullshit. And she takes this thing called Mandrax. The name of the interviewer is Mandrax, as we learn later on. The butler is like, how many pills did you just take? How many pills have you taken today? And he's like making note of it. And she goes, I've only taken two. No, she says, what is it?
She says one. And he goes, so two then. And then she's like five, like 18. Like she's like,
she says two, and then he writes down four.
Yeah,
like
that's
in the
it. Yeah.
But yeah, she's doing her makeup in here. It's beautifully lit. And then he says, Mandrax is not a reliable companion. Do you need me to drive you to where you're going today? And she goes, I'm going to walk. She says, which is beautiful. And then he says, he asks about whether or not the camera crew is real. And this is when she says the line, what is real and what is not real is my business. And from this point on, the movie is just going like, I agree with you. She says, I will not be here for the doctor's appointment that you made without my permission, Mr. Butler Man. But she says, he should probably take a look at your back instead because you've been moving that piano.
She is diva.
It's incredible. And then they hard cut to the next chapter one. The clapboard says La Diva on it. And the butler and the maid watch as she talks to the interviewer, which with more context, it's clear that they are hearing her talking to herself, like in the hallway, in the room all by herself.
Yeah, we'll never get the luxury of what being on a Quaalude was like. But like I heard of the level of drugs out there, the Quaalude was the Rolls Royce, what you wanted to be on.
Diva level drugs.
It was so fabulous that they discontinued it. Like,
I Yeah. I mean, the only knowledge I know of it previous to this is like Wolf of Wall Street. Same. When they were doing lewds. Yeah.
They're the reason they banned it. But like back then, yeah, exactly. You would pop a Quaalude and you would just sit there being like, my life is fabulous. Like,
yeah, that's the other thing, right? Because like Angelina Jolie, at least in my other movie, never does the like lewd thing that you see in Wolf of Wall Street, where she's like slurring her words and like, you know, talking very slowly.
She's
I'm sure
a fucking expert. That's why. Yeah. She is. She's just been like living her voice. She can own her own Quaaludes. She knows how to roll with it.
So she's being interviewed by the false interviewer, the hallucinogenic interviewer. And when she's interviewed, I don't know if everyone else noticed this, but during like normal scenes, during lucidity, the camera is locked off and clearly on like, you know, rails or on, you know, like a tripod. But when she's being interviewed, the camera immediately goes in handheld, which is, I think, because the character, there's a cameraman in the scene that is holding the camera as well. And it all feels a bit more like as if she's being, you know, her privacy is being intervened.
Yeah. And this is a woman who was in the press giving interviews, being filmed. So like, I do think it's that idea. Like this is how she wants the world to see her.
Yeah, exactly. She refuses to answer her questions from her hallucination. They keep asking her, like, you know, like, when was the last time you sang and all that kind of stuff. She says that she last performed 4.5 years ago, and they ask, why haven't you performed since then? And she says, I'm afraid that audiences expect miracles, and I can no longer perform miracles. I'm just like, whoa! What a beautiful line.
Watching this without knowing that, well, now knowing that he's fake completely for real, which I suspected, but like for real that he's fake, it's just such a diva move to be like, I'm imagining an interviewer, and I'm just going to be a weird douchebag to them, but also just be big diva energy, and that's that's amazing. That's an incredible way to go out, is just being like, just interview me. But also, I'm going to give you nothing.
I love it. She even says to her hallucination, like, if I push back, you should always force another answer to me. Like, even she's talking to herself, like, I know I refuse to answer this question to myself, but next time, push myself a little bit harder so I can answer the question.
Watched the first part of the Jackie movie and was like, I want that at the end of my life.
So then she's like, I must go. I have an engagement I must make. I must leave. And they're like, oh, but so soon? We're just in the middle of the interview. And she's like, you must follow me. And Jesus fucking Christ. I don't know if you see Paris in your half of the movie, Ethan. This is the most beautiful I have ever seen Paris. Especially this shot is shot. It's right in front of the Eiffel Tower. Mm. Again, the sky's got this like teal green to it. It feels like it looks fucking gorgeous. And she's walking through this like palladium essentially or something, like right in front of the Eiffel Tower. And there's this like group of men and they're all singing a song from Carmen, the El Torador song. And
it's incredible. It's a hallucination essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's like,
it's the idea of Paris.
Quaaludes. I don't know. I believe it. Like, I believe that that's what a Quaalude does.
Up until this part, I was like, oh, this movie's pretty good. This was when it like transcended for me. I was like, the way it's shot, all the extras are singing this song at her and it's all very overwhelming and she looks gorgeous and Paris looks gorgeous. And then they all disappear. Them and the interviewers all disappear at the same time. And it's amazing. And then she continues her walk to an empty theater where a lone piano player waits. You know, she admits that her desire to sing again is foolish. She brings up the fact that she sang for her maid earlier and that, you know, her maid doesn't know anything about opera except for
what
she taught her.
This guy is named Geoffrey Tate. He was a real person. He was a famous English conductor of classical music. So he is actually a real person with a real Wikipedia. Go on.
Wow. Oh. That's when you make it.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's real, is via his Wikipedia. Because this is the character I also feel is a bit like a hallucination.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing was, is so, like, she had, okay, so this is, I mean, this is where it gets personal, that they don't really go, I mean, they go into, as you said, like, when she's a younger woman, she essentially had an eating disorder, and the irony of it was, when she was first on the scene, she could fucking sing, because opera singers tend to be larger people, because they have a larger... And apparently, she lost a lot of weight. And the failure of her voice, some speculate, is because of her body couldn't to have the breath control.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so that's, I mean, they don't say that at all, but like that's why now in like 2025 when we can do the research and to have these conversations. So there's this evil irony of like,
yeah,
this woman had body dysmorphia. She was, these pills kept her from eating, blah, blah, blah. Because they keep asking, like, did you eat today? And through getting beautiful, it ruined her gift.
Yeah. And she even mentions, yeah, it's also a pressure that was put on her by the press and by,
exactly,
the audiences.
Exactly, yeah. Like, it was society.
Later on, she mentions, yeah, that she was called fat. And then, like, when she was, mm-hmm, on stage, people said that, you know, she resembled, like, an elephant and whatever.
Yeah,
like,
all this opera sort of stuff. Opera critics are assholes. That's all I have to say. And I'm sure they were worse back then.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a tragedy, yeah, because it's clear that she had an amazing gift. And so it's in this moment when in privacy as well, where she's just like, I don't know if I can really sing. She mentions that she wishes she could sing the human song before she goes away. She mentions that she's still in love with Mr. Onassis. And this is the first time, like, really hearing Onassis, and it's starting to, like, really sink in. And I'm like, wait a second, is he related to Jackie O?
Yeah.
She says that she feels like her home is a prison, that it is crowded, that her waitstaff remind her of her family, and, you know, even though there's two of them there, she feels as if she's judged. And he's like, look, it's just me and you here, you know, I can play this beautiful song for you. It's clear that you have a lot of emotion. Why don't you sing that emotion out? And so he allows her the freedom to sing. He plays for her in this moment. She starts to sing and she gets overwhelmed. It ends up clearly, like, I think bringing her some form of, like, both physical but emotional pain by the end of the song. It's a song of, like, love and longing. And then she ends up, like, I think hitting a false note at the end of it. And she grabs her jacket and she storms off. And he's just like, I'll be here again tomorrow at the same time. And she storms out of the theater. We see Paris again, and it's gorgeous.
It is. It's really beautiful.
It's fucking beautiful. It all feels like it's shot during, like, golden hour. It's gorgeous. So she arrives home, and the doctor is waiting there for her. And the doctor and the butler, you know, she's like, did you take a look at my butler in his back? And the doctor says, yes, the only way to cure that is if he's to stop moving pianos, which is great. Even he's fabulous. And he says, you know, Maria, we must speak. We must have a conversation about life and death and sanity and insanity. And I'm like, oh, yes, a French doctor.
I want to talk to you more about, like, the meaning of life as well. That's part of health, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Maria tells her butler the piano is in a good place. And the butler walks away. And then the butler and the cook have a conversation in private while the doctor attends to Maria. This is, like, one of the few scenes where Maria is not present. And her helper talking to each other, and they're mentioning that she hasn't eaten in 3 days. And the cook, who has a bit more sort of, like, or is trying to look at things in a more positive way, she's like, well, she's gone 4 days in the past, so she's doing okay.
This is on track. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we cut back to Maria. It's later in the evening time. She is embarrassed, and she starts to hide her medication. She hides it all over her room, puts it in pockets,
her outfits.
Her outfits, puts it, like, in, like, a medicine, like, not medicine, they puts it in, like, makeup containers, like, tries to hide it from everyone. But then she gives the rest of the bottles to her butler and says, dispose of these immediately. I don't need them. And he's like, well, the doctor didn't say that. And he's just like, she's like, is he even a real doctor? And he's like, well, he's a specialist in the blood. And I don't really know what they're trying to get at. In my half of the movie, she never actually talks to the doctor later on after the blood results come in. And I'm not sure, like, what the blood results could imply.
Not,
like,
good.
The blood results yeah?
Not good, it turns out. Turns out bad.
Well, then, I can't wait to hear what that means. But, yeah, so but it sounds like the results are not good, and she refuses to even do what the doctor is asking her to do. And then the butler says, well, you know, the pianist called, and the pianist said that you should come see him again tomorrow because he said that your voice was full of hope. And, you know, he's like, I hope that makes you happy to hear. And it's such a beautiful moment where, like, he's just trying so hard to, like, bring her some sense of joy because he can see how tortured she is. And this moment is so beautiful. I mean, I don't know, like, you definitely speak to this as well, honey. But, like, it's this great moment where she's like, she talks to her butler and she's like, I want you to make an appointment with a silent hairdresser. And I want you to make it a reservation at a restaurant where the staff know who I am.
Yes. OK. Yeah. I mean, this is where I like the movie because, as we said, like, yes, she pays them, But she has found clearly, and in this, you know, this whoever wrote this, sorry, Stephen Knight wrote the screenplay, is humanizing her. You have to humanize her. She can't just be a diva. So it's idea. I would love to know if they were based on real people. It's probably, this to me is someone's, you know, I'm writing a, much like Spencer. What is it like at Christmas time with the royal family when they all hate you?
Yeah.
Like this is, I think, very much someone's, you know, like just dream child. And you have to give her two people who love her. And it's her butler and her maid. But he does a good job of showing that could, like, making it believable. And I agree, like, she wants to be fabulous and he knows that. And so, like, to me, both Bruna and the butler are both super fans that she found and said,
yes,
come live with me. Be my, all you have to do is cook for me and every now and then I'll sing for you. And in that moment, that's what's going on is like,
it's a beautiful moment because she's saying like, do this for me and do that for me. And then she's like, and one day when I write my autobiography, I will title it The Day That My Butler Saved My Life. But on the other hand,
it's also a woman who's found two enablers.
Oh, 100%.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I think it's beautiful, but it's also, you can look at it and be like, you found two people who will let you get away with your bullshit. And
yeah.
She's a diva.
But, like, she can, though. Like, she's obviously employing them. And she's a diva. And clout and everything. It's like, but that's why she reminds them every so often, like, hey, make sure to push back on me because I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. I will walk all over you if I need to. Yeah. And this is a really great moment. She says this really beautiful thing where she's like, every time I fall into a river, you always fish me out again. And it's just like, oh, God.
There are so many lines in this movie that are just like, once again, I might watch this movie over the course of a week and a half. Taking on, because as you're totally reminding me, I'm like, I was sitting there with my boyfriend going, oh my God. Oh my God. Diva.
It's lines like this and it's moments like this that I think, because the movie does have a very like measured, slow pace to it. And it's moments like this that really give it a sense of momentum when the movie isn't moving very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which is, it's not against it. The movie is allowing you to live in her mind and live in her like thought process. So it works. It's not a dig against it. It works really well. So she ends up going to the restaurant where the waitstaff all know who she is. And this part, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, honey, but I've got very serious thoughts on this. So she's sitting outside of the restaurant in Paris, and this guy comes up to her and he says, Oz, are you Maria? You broke my heart in New York. And it's at first you're like, oh, and she's just like, oh, what performance of mine did you see? And he goes, oh no, you broke my heart because I bought tickets and you didn't perform that night. And she goes, people said I was sick. People said I was lying. I never lied. I was always sick. How dare you? I never faked it. And she starts screaming in his fucking face. And he goes, no, it was no harm. No done. No harm done. You meant, you know, it was so heartbreaking because I didn't get to see you. And she goes, how dare you accuse me of being, of lying? I never lied. I never lied. And then he just like walks off. And I was like, fuck that guy.
I mean, this is where it's so interesting to hear two people who don't know Maria Callas and all that spend a day on her Wikipedia. Like, she had scandals. Like, seven, maybe 10 paragraphs of scandals.
I was saying, I didn't scroll that far earlier, but while Mike's been regaling, you know, the first half, I was just scrolling and just being like, yep. Oh, vocal decline. Oh, okay. And then we keep going down quite a bit. And then scandals and late career. Quite a lot of we're eating there. Like, it keeps going. Like, she really
like my favorite scandal, and it's a famous photo, is she was performing Madame Butterfly in Chicago in 1955. And she was confronted by a process server who handed her papers about a lawsuit brought to her by some guy who claimed he was her agent. She was photographed in like her Madame Butterfly outfit, like a kimono, with her mouth turned in a snarl at the man as he walks away. And this photo was sent around the world and gave rise to the myth of Callas as a temperamental prima donna and a tigress. Like, that's one scandal of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 paragraphs. Like, so this woman was we talk about social media and how it's driving us crazy. I think social media makes us all think we're Maria Callas.
But we don't deserve that kind of attention.
Yeah, like she was like she got and exactly some gay guy comes up to her and is like, I didn't see you in New York.
And
in her head, it's like, you fucking ass. I am high as shit. And you, all I want to do is sit here at a cafe and be noticed and loved. And you, my first interaction is you. And so exactly. And so the diva comes out like.
And like that, the thing is, like, I put myself in his position, and this is definitely my worst like fear about going up to like a famous person and just ruining their day and getting yelled at. But then I put myself in her position, and I'm like, oh, someone saw me in New York, and it meant a lot to them. And he's like, you broke my heart because you didn't perform. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. Go back to your stupid fucking house and never speak to me again. You're trash.
As a Broadway fan, I always see some of my favorite stars being like, don't be weird at the stage door.
Just don't be
weird.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's easy. Just say, like, I appreciate your work. It's nice to meet you. That's all you have to say.
That's all she wanted to do. She said, find that restaurant where they know me. And now she's going to be she's going to tell her butler, Ethan, she's going to say, that restaurant's off limits now. Because that guy is wandering around.
And so then the waiter comes out after this whole, like, shouting match. It's not a shouting match. It's her yelling at a guy. And the waiter comes out and is like, do you want to come in the restaurant instead? And she goes, no, I don't come to restaurants to eat. I come here to be adored. I'm just, like, imagining
that's a line.
Someone still red-faced after yelling at a man who was there just to try to, like, talk to her. And she's just like, I come here so people adore me. Darling. It's amazing. So then she imagines across the street. She imagines her dead husband getting out of a car, Mr. Onassis. And she goes, runs across the street into the building that she sees her husband running into. And she flashes back into black and white and remembers the time when they first met. And Onassis is quite a charmer. I don't know if you picked up on this as well, honey. But holy moly, this guy could fucking spin a yarn.
Yeah. When you're rich, people forgive a lot of sins. But they cast a really good actor.
He's very good, and he knows how to read these lines very well. Like, I'm trying to remember, there's one moment where it's like he says something where it's like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember, like, all, because it's so fucking charming, where he's just like, oh, this isn't even it's not in my hands, it's not in your hands. This is a moment that must mean a lot to the both of us, where a choice is made and neither of us have made the choice yet. And it's all, or like this great moment where her husband, because she's actually married at the time,
it's a party that he met her at that was thrown in her honor, by Onassis, because he wanted to talk with her, essentially.
Yes.
Also, they never, but just to correct, I don't believe that Onassis ever married Maria. It didn't seem that way. It seems like they were just partners for a long time.
That's the thing, is that's what they don't go into, is that this courtship went on for a while. And they were having, basically, an affair. She couldn't get out of her marriage.
Guy was a dick.
Yeah, like, and so it went on, and they were only, let me see if here if I can find it, they were only together officially. She ended up renouncing her U.S. citizenship in Paris. That would help end her marriage. This is because after her renunciation, she was only an Orthodox church. She had married in a Roman Catholic church. This divorced her in Greece. The renunciation also helped her finances, as she no longer had to pay U.S. taxes. Her relationship, you're right. Her relationship to Onassis ended 2 years later when he left her for Jackie Kennedy.
Shit, dog.
So they, she left her husband, did all that, and then 2 years later, he's like, bye.
He left for Jackie. Yeah, exactly. But this is a really great moment. She also later on mentions, I think he's dead now. Onassis is now dead in the timeline of this movie. And she still loves him. She still feels like he was the love of his life, basically. Love of her life, basically. There's this great moment where he's talking to her, and he says, like, there's this boat that I would love for you to join me on. And then her husband comes by and he goes, I was just inviting her onto this boat, and you'll never guess what she said. And she has not answered yet. And then he allows her to tell her husband, basically, that she wants to join him on the boat, basically, which we see at the beginning of the movie. It seems like a very romantic excursion between the two of them. and invites her on the ship. Then we hard cut. She's back in the restaurant. She's talking to that interviewer again, and we see the waiter, and clearly the waiter's like, she is talking to herself. And then he plays a record for her, and she hates it. She hates it because, as she says, as I mentioned before, she says that a song should never be perfect. It should be performed differently each time. And then her butler appears, she's brought to her car, and the butler says that she must call the blood doctor. And she says, I must call the blood doctor, or I should call the blood doctor, or I can call the blood doctor. And he says, either way, you got to call him. And she says, you can't remember what he told you, which means I'm not sure if I'll be able to sleep tonight, which is such a good line because it's so true. Because if a doctor says you must call me, or if a doctor says you should call me, one means a very bad thing and one just means like, give me a call whenever you want, you know? It's a good moment. It's a very good line.
Yeah, you have to be living fast and hard to die at 53.
For real.
Of a heart attack, essentially. Like,
holy moly.
Yeah, so she's literally, she knows what's, that's what I love about this movie is they put into the idea that she knows what's coming.
Yeah, she says pretty consistently, it seems like she thinks she's at the end of her rope. It seems like she's like, I'm going to die. I mean, you know, I read the script. I die in a week. So, she's back home. She cannot find the pills that she's hidden, and she's screaming for her help to help her, but nobody comes. It's in the middle of the night. She can't find her pills. And then that night she has a dream that is in black and white, which, as we know, based on everything else, is a flashback. And it is in World War II. And we see these two girls singing for like fascist Nazi officers. And they love how this one girl sings, this girl who's a little bit bigger, even though her sister is a dancer and much thinner. They prefer how the bigger girl is singing. And so they're like, can we please meet with her like individually? And then this girl starts to like undress on the bed, and the Nazi officer is just like, no. Not that, not yet. I want to hear you sing. And then she sings Carmen for the Nazi officer.
It's handled with kid gloves, I feel like, but it's very dark. You realize
it's horrifying.
Yeah.
And the implications are enough.
Yeah.
And the fact that all this is also later on, we also sort of realize, one, that this is a young Maria, and two, that this is being put on by their mom, essentially, which is really fucking terrifying. So it's this moment that's really sad and strange and scary, and it's her singing Carmen very beautifully. This actor who is singing is so good, and I don't know, honey, do you know this? Who is, because clearly this is the actor who is singing these moments. Who is singing the other moments for older Maria? Is it the same actor, or is it another opera singer? Is it like archival audio of Maria? Do you know?
I assume it's archival of Maria.
Okay.
Because a lot of records, they claim that, I would have to look into this, but they claim that like some of it is actually Angelina Jolie, but like, I don't believe it.
Lies.
Allegedly. But I mean, but it's definitely Maria Callas that they're playing, that she's lip syncing to. I mean,
also probably why the lip sync is off, because even though like if you had the best audio engineers in the world, it's always going to sound kind of like old records. You know what I mean? So
yeah. At this part in the movie, I want you to picture this. It's 1956. You're about to make your Metropolitan Opera debut, and Time Magazine puts out a damaging cover story about Maria Callas, with special attention paid to her difficult relationship with her mother and some unpleasant exchanges between the two, because that was a scandal. So like, that's what this entire scene encapsulates is like, you're about to make your Met opera debut, and your tweets from Amelia Perez getting covered, you know, like that, like suddenly all of a sudden everyone's reading about your mother abuse and whatever it was. So like, clearly there was more that happened, but this is that movie's moment of being like, and she had a difficult relationship with her mother, you know,
and here's why.
Yeah, exactly.
So she wakes up, her maid is the one that wakes her up in bed, and first thing she says is like, I was having a beautiful dream about my sister. So we now know, like, okay, so we know who's who now. We know what that flashback is about. Gives us a little bit of context. And then two, she says, where are my meds? Why'd you take my meds? All the meds I was hiding in my room, they're gone. And the maid is like, well, the doctor told us that we need to keep your medication in the kitchen rather than have it in the room that you're in. And she's like, did the doctor also say you needed to remove the meds I hid? and she says, I don't want to call the doctor. And then she's also expecting a package. Her sister apparently sent her a package. And so she opens up the package, but not in front of the help. She tells the maid to leave, and the maid leaves. And then she opens up the package, and within the package, more pills, baby. And then we cut to the next scene, the next day, the next title card.
So this part, just this whole part to me is A, what I was saying earlier. She's found two enablers. They know all of her tricks. They the doctor came in and said, you have to take all those pills out. You know where they are. But then I also wonder, my theory is that the sister is a dream and that somehow she's getting, but maybe I'm wrong, but like she's getting her sister.
I don't know.
Or maybe she is getting her sister because I was like, did she order them herself and just pretend it's from her? I don't know.
That's what I'd imagine is that she, that's what I was imagining is that it's not really from her sister, but I don't know. Was her sister alive at the time?
Well, we'll get there with Ethan.
Yeah. Okay. So then we cut to the next scene, Important Shrews. It is another title card on a clapboard, and we're back with the interviewer. And she still has no intention of performing, she says to the interviewer. And she's seeking something that she lost. She used to sing for money. That's where it all began. I was just having a dream about this the other night. And then she walks by this Mexican restaurant, which I'm looking at it and I'm like, is that a Mexican restaurant? She says that it's a Mexican restaurant, but I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't look like a Mexican restaurant.
It's in France. It's in France.
Yeah.
Doesn't she say like, someday I'm going to get fajitas there?
Yes. She's like, I wish I had the courage to go in and get fajitas. And I'm like, girl, same.
Okay. I didn't dream that.
No, she says, I want to get fajitas with chips and cream. I wish I had the courage.
That's just wild coming from someone who performs in front of, you know, massive crowds and things like that. And then being like something that everyone does like a TGI Fridays, you know, they get fajitas.
That's the eating disorder part of it because that is very like, I just want to get the most, greasy things.
And then she says, it reminds me of the time I told my mom to fuck off. And the interviewer is like, oh, well, tell me about that time in Mexico where you told your mom to fuck off. And she says, no, it wasn't in Mexico. My cook can make anything and my mom can ruin everything. And so I invited my mom over for dinner and I told her to fuck off as she ate my cook's food.
Goodness.
It's a fucking amazing scene. And then the scene just sort of ends, and then she walks by where she's meeting up with the piano player again, and there's all these people out in front of the place that she's about to go into, the theater, and they're all dressed and prepared for her to perform Madame Butterfly. And then the interviewer is like, it's like you're in New York again. You need to fucking perform. He screams in her face. And then all these, you know, women come out and they're all dressed as like, you know, geishas and stuff like that. And then we see her, and I'm just like, okay, what kind of makeup are they going to put on her for Madame Butterfly?
I have to say, I've seen the Met Opera's version of Madame Butterfly, and I actually really enjoy it. They do cast appropriately, but like, it is one of the most famous operas, and that scene is like the end of, I think, like Act Two, what they were doing, and it's just like, it's considered just, oh, I love Madame Butterfly. Opera doesn't need to make sense.
It doesn't need to make sense. And so then she arrives. She arrives at the theater, and the piano player is there, and he says, Pierre, the lighting tech is here. And it's so funny because it's just like, I think they make some dig about like a lighting tech working during lunch hours. It's unheard of in France because they've got such crazy unions, but he wants to hear you perform and all this sort of stuff.
I work for a theater and we do not fuck with the union break. So it is a true fact.
It's fair. And so he's like, and then she's like, and then he's like, it's just going to be me and you and my piano. And she says, what about Pierre? And he says, I told him to leave the minute you start singing. But he doesn't end up doing that because he needs to hear her sing.
It's the diva.
It's the diva.
Like, imagine you were hired. They're making you skip your lunch. So you're getting double time and a half. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what am I doing in this? Is that Marie Callas?
Yeah, like, right. I have to watch.
Like, I need to. Yeah, I'm probably a homosexual and I need to see this.
Well, as someone who is not who's not a homosexual, I will say this scene was beautiful, and I wound up watching a little bit over by half because I needed to hear her sing because it was genuinely beautiful. But before she starts singing, they mentioned the fact that her first performance was in Venice when she was considered quote unquote fat. She said that she was nervous about sinking the Venetian boats because of how big she was, apparently. And she mentions that she was an understudy and that she learned to sing the part in a week because somebody got sick. And it's just like, wow, she worked really hard for her place in opera. And here's where she is now. And she begins to sing. And that's the end of my half. Ethan, it's all up to you now.
All right. So I see a piano man. He says, let's try that again. And she says, not today. And then she leaves. Yeah. And the ADR in the section, I wrote weird ADR. And I don't remember what part was weird, but I imagine it was the singing. Probably.
Yeah, probably was.
We see the little filmmaker boy who
So Ethan, I need to stop you before we go on. Yeah. So like, you just came into this or like, Angelina Jolie, maybe this is the next Tomb Raider. Like,
no, I was thinking it was more like the next Salt, but you know, same thing.
Oh yeah,
but like, so you just didn't know anything about Maria Callas. You didn't know anything about opera.
Nope.
You didn't know anything about Paris.
Quaaludes. No.
Okay,
So I know one out of six.
I want to get vaguely a baseline of where we're working from.
All right. The baseline so you can build it back up so it makes
exactly
sense. Yeah, fair enough. Well, I know that the little filmmaker boy Mandrakes is the guy from what's that movie called?
Ender's Game.
Power of the Dog.
Power Dog. Power Dog. Ender's Game, not Ender's Game.
I've seen him in a lot of things recently. Like
he's an Elvis.
He was in something else just recently, Like,
He's white.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was. He's white. What did I just see him in 1 second? I just need to confirm.
That's okay.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Very noticeable face. But, yeah.
Oh, he was in the Disclaimer Apple show with Cate Blanchett and Kevin Kline on Apple TV.
Oh, yeah. I'm curious about that.
Oh, just watch the first episode, watch the last episode, and you will get everything you need to know.
Don't watch the middles. Oh,
I had such high hopes. Anyways.
Anyway, she asks, like, what's the movie called that you're making? And he says, Le Callas, The Last Days. I'm like, this is pretty on the nose. This is like a very strange way to make a movie, but all right, kid. And then he starts asking like real shit. He's like, you know, your child would have been about like that kid in the boat's age if your man wasn't so evil. And I'm like, child, what's going on? That's just like, did she lose that? I don't know.
So that's the interviewer, Cody Smith McPhee, asking that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's historically, because we know things about divas, we reach out. She lost a child, and it eventually historians realized that she lost the ability to have children in general.
It was It was Onassis's child.
Yeah.
Too, if I think so, yeah. So there's like some speculation that maybe...
He wanted an heir, and she couldn't provide him with an heir. That's why 2 years later, Jackie Kennedy.
He's going to go to a Kennedy, yeah. Anyway, so yeah. And then she starts saying stuff like, just now, I was in Venice before him. Okay, first off, very, very hard movie to follow if you don't know what's going on. If you don't know all the what's real, what's fake. It's just like flashing to black and white.
This is hard
all
mode.
Over the place. It's,
That's
it's
so mean of you, Mike, to have
mode.
Ethan do the second half of this one. Well, any of them. Any of them, I'm sure Ethan would be like, whoa.
Wow,
who's Princess Diana?
This one is hard because you don't even like. I didn't know who this woman was. Like I didn't know that. I knew she was based on a real person.
I'm just imagining Ethan doing the second half of Spencer and thinking it's about George Michael because they have the same haircut. It's like, wait, this is Princess Diana?
He saw Diana the musical. He knows a thing or two.
Yeah, exactly.
Touché.
The most accurate way. Anyway, Sully. She says, like, I'm looking back at my life and seeing the truth. She cuts back to her gambling on a ship. She's like, oh, I won at roulette. And then she goes and talks to someone who's like, because this is Onassis's boat. And he's just like, well, maybe he let you win. And she's like, how? It's roulette. And he's like, he always finds a way. You can cheat at anything. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's rich people, I guess. And so she says, I'm trying a new thing. I'm going to say my thoughts out loud. I'm just going to speak them to anyone, and people are going to hear it. And she goes into the yacht underneath and meets with Onassis. And he says, I got you a Hermes statue here. And she's like, wow, it's beautiful. And he's like, I don't care about beauty. I'm part of the ugly tribe. Unlike you, Hermes is my god. Also, I stole it from a museum in Athens. And I say, if I want something, I steal it. I was just like, this guy is really laying out his entire philosophy just.
And I also realize for like where it cuts off, because this is like a 2 hour long movie. So there's 1 hour and 2 hour, second hour. And I agree, Ethan, you're into the, we're losing lucidity of what's real and what's fake. And I realize like at that hour mark is where the director is like, now we're going to go into like, she is losing control. She's going to die.
Ironically, this is, I think, also the, when we were watching The Father. This is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I watched the first half of The Father, and Ethan watched the last half when he was losing lucidity.
As well. Oh, man. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm just here to watch people die. That's all I'm here for. I just want to see the last
and
days.
Lose their minds.
I feel really bad about it. Anyway, so she's like, you think I belong to my husband, and after we sleep together, I will belong to you? To be a possession on your cabinet is not my desire. Says so she keeps explaining to Aristotle Onassis why it won't
what
work.
A great name, by the way. That feels like a fucking like comic book
he's
character
the most
name.
Greek guy ever. He's gonna be like, my name is Aristotle, that's how Greek I am. Like, also the actor they cast, I was looking at pictures of what he really looked like, pretty freaking accurate. Like, he looked
well point. It's also this, I mean, once again, in the grand tragedy, this woman was an opera singer. Opera singers do tragedies where they die. You know, Man of Butterfly.
Carmen.
Spoilers.
Carmen, La Boheme. I'm naming all basically like Puccini operas. But like, it's almost like what the self-fulfilling prophecy of she was destined to die tragically. And Aristotle Onassis, with the most Greek badass name, was meant for greatness. And in the loss of her, his love of her, it set in motion the end of her life. Like, it's the most Grecian kind of thing. Anyways, just go on.
No, that's a good point.
It's apt. It's very apt.
And there is, they do talk about, like, Maria is also a Greek as well. They talk about that a lot and kind of allude to that. So I think taking that as a lens to view this story, I think is absolutely accurate. I think it's a great read on that. Anyway, so she's explaining to the reporter, or the movie maker, I guess, the Quaalude hallucination. She keeps explaining, like, it didn't work because he wanted someone he could control, but my body knew I was a tiger. And I'm like, you're really... The lines are getting more bold, but they're making less sense in a way, you know? Which I appreciate. I think it's a fun way of looking at how the lucidity is kind of changing.
I have to let you know right now, I took a Quaalude before this podcast, so this is all making sense
to
me.
Yeah, this will all line up then. Perfect. So the opera says, like, I guess there's like an opera next door. Where does she live? Does she live in an opera
house? Paris. No, she just lives in a normal
apartment.
Because,
like, she's like, this is, she goes into an area, and there's like they're like, this music's so loud, there's like an opera going on, and she's like, this opera is so loud. It's so freaking loud. It's like American radio. What did I just watch? She's saying this in her place.
I'm confused.
Yeah. I'm quaaluded. It quaaludes me. Anyway.
I'm pretty sure she's just hallucinating the opera house.
I didn't know this. This is not black and white. At least I could see when it was black and white. I was like, I could know exactly what's happening.
I have no answer for you, Ethan. You're feeling the experience.
Okay. That makes me feel better. Because at least I was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to understand this. And, you know, the problem with coming in and watching a second half of any movie is you're just like, did this go over my head? Am I missing something? No. Okay, good.
It's like when I watched Emilia Perez and I 100% believed that Emilia's like cousin was the guy who died. Like, I just allow the lie of the movie to like be the reality of the movie for a while.
That's fair.
You just accept what the movie's giving you in that moment.
I will accept every little bit of it, just like this little reporter boy. So she has to record. She wants to record herself and actually compare herself to her past voice. I'm just like, oof, that's a rough choice to do. And so, you know, the butler comes up and is like, did you call the doctor? And she just kind of ignores him as Bruna kind of gives her the recording device to actually like learn how to use it, and she does this thing where she's like, this is technical. How do I turn it on? How do I do the, even with the gadgets, I turn on this thing for me and let it record.
How do I send an email?
Yeah, pretty much that. And she's like, and then to the butler, she's like, well, I'd like you to stay back and clean the car because you bring up the doctor again. He's like, all right, I guess I'll do that. And so in the interview, cuts back to the interview again. Why would you be with such a brute like Onassis? And she says, because with him, I could be a girl again. And at this point, like, the two, the butler and the maid are both talking, like, who's giving her the pills? Like, she's clearly on pills again. Who's doing this? What's going on here? And I'm like, who is giving her the pill? That's a great question. And then she appears and says, we're going out to celebrate my life. Put on nicer clothes, both of you. Yeah. And they just go to like a random, I think a hotel.
Yeah, like it's like a lobby hotel.
Yeah, lobby at a hotel. And she's like, I believe I'm expected. And the butler's like, I don't know about that,
Madam. Oh, yeah. She's tripping balls.
Yeah, she's like, well, I believe I am, and that's all that matters. And she just goes up the stairs and says, wait here. And she just goes up the stairs. And then it cuts to black and white, a time before, not even related to this. And it's her and Onassis at a big party, the party of the president. And he's like,
what president?
John F. Kennedy, baby. You know who it is. And so he's just like, I got you to the president's party. Isn't that awesome? And then some random fan comes up and is like, oh, wow, Maria, you're amazing. Also, who are you? This other guy, Onassis. And Onassis says to Maria, tell this lady I'm the richest man here. and then suddenly JFK appears and he says, ah. Like a jump scare. He's like, ah. As he walks down far away, says, here comes the luckiest man. Have you seen his wife? Wow. And then he walks away and I'm like, I think I'm getting some clues as to what's going on. And this is why I started putting together, like, wait a second. Onassis.
Jackie Onassis.
Wow. I mean, this is, if anything, this whole month has been not only a celebration of women who left their mark, but a history lesson. Like,
it really has. That's true. This is honestly, this era is really kind of a blind spot to me. Yeah. Just kind of this time. Like, so it's really enlightening, been kind of going through it. And watching it all.
The women who left their mark and the men who abused them.
Honestly, yeah. That's the subtitle they didn't put in. So then we cut to...
Oh, you're don't like ladies having opinions.
I would like to hear Marilyn Monroe sing happy birthday to me. And therefore, that's the next scene. Is Marilyn Monroe doing the happy birthday in front of everyone?
Is it really?
Yeah,
did we see Marilyn in this?
We do.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And Maria turns to Onassis and says, it's amazing how everyone cares about her, even if your voice is bad.
I was going to say, she must hate her voice.
And then Onassis comes back and says, no one cares about her voice, just like no one cares about your body. And I'm like,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, fuck. This guy's not great.
This guy sucks.
Anyway, then we cut to Maria just in kind of like a little cafe, and JFK sits down and talks to her and is like, hey, you want to come sing for us in the White House? And then he kind of just flaunts the fact that, you know, I know all these things about you. And she's like, how do you know all this? He's like, well, the CIA, we know a lot about you. And I'm like, why are you spending government resources on learning about Maria? I don't know what the point of that is. But maybe this is her hallucination where she's just like, I'm so important the CIA knows about me.
Yeah, she's 100% a diva. Like,
she's a diva.
And then he walks away.
The CIA wants to know about a diva.
It does, yeah.
He walks away and there's a giant hole in the back of his head.
Well, and then he continues talking and she's like, oh, sounds like Onassis wants to take me and Jackie on a yacht. And, you know, he still calls you his wife. And I'm like, wait, married? I don't, And he says, JFK says, he has a painting he wants to show my wife. And she says, oh, yeah, it's in his bedroom. Hint, hint. And he says, which is, you know, sad. Because
is this actor doing a JFK impersonation?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say he's going hard. He's just kind of talking.
He's being respectful.
He looks like him, so that's he gets.
Oh, he does.
Looks,
he doesn't need to sound like him.
He doesn't need to sound like him at all.
Yeah.
So the bedroom. The painting in the bedroom.
But, you know, she also says something that Ari told me last night he loved me, which is sad considering he was what he was doing at 4 a.m. So she knows that he's not even like he's desperate for her, but doesn't respect her, I think is kind of where she's landing on this. And she mentions to JFK, you and I belong to a very special group of angels where we can go wherever we want, but we can never, ever get away. But that doesn't make us friends. And she walks away. And I'm like, hell yeah. That was pretty
good.
I mean,
this part is very dreamlike and weird. And so it is. I'm sitting here like listening to you describe it. And I'm like, yeah, this part was strange.
It had a weird feeling to it because like it was such an empty cafe. And maybe that's where they would want the president to meet Maria. But like it seemed like, unlike Maria going to meet the president, it felt like the president was going to meet Maria. And I think that's how she views that situation in her mind. It might have been much different in reality. I don't know if they actually did meet, but that's the memory.
Probably.
This is also like a big exposition dump. It's giving you a lot of like background. You know,
for
it's
me,
like,
the person who comes in halfway through the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
I also just love imagining this director who also worked on Jackie, which is like, get that JFK guy on the horn. We got another part four.
At this point, he's just on retainer.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in doing the Jackie movie, it was like, who's this Maria Callas person? You know?
Yeah. The person that Jackie wound up marrying her husband. Yeah.
The connective tissue is definitely there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
he did
admit
they exist in the same multiverse.
So.
He did actually
JFK will
that.
Return
and he said movie. That the movie that Jackie is in the same world that Maria is.
That's crazy because in the back you see like little shots of Diana, Princess Diana, just in the back corner there, just waiting until she's gonna get revealed.
If you look really far in the background, you can actually see Natalie Portman. Well, so, hi there. I'm Jackie.
So she comes
good
back.
Try, Mike.
Would you like to join my gang of ladies?
Not the Jackie accent. That was
she has the eye patch and everything.
She does have a crazy accent, but it's not that.
Look, I worked 8 months perfecting that accent.
Now we know why you didn't get the Oscar nom.
Should have been 16 months. Anyway, we come back to real life, and Maria comes back down from wherever she was in the hotel. I don't know if she booked a stay, whatever. Weirdly,
she was just looking at a wall for 35 minutes, and then she turned around and walked back down.
Well, she comes back down to her servants and is like, all right, what's next? Like, they're coming back, like, the party person's here, and it's like, all right, where's the next venue? And they're like, we're tired. We don't want to do this anymore. And she's like, all right, fine. So they go back home, and the doctor's there, ready to ambush her. And it's like, fine, I'll talk to the doctor. So they sit down, and Maria, not caring about any sort of health stuff, just says, what do you know about opera? And he's like, I know quite a bit. He's like, are you familiar with this play that I did not recognize, and I'm hoping honeybees could fill the blank in, about Violetta.
Violetta is basically I'm trying to think of the modern day equivalent, but it's basically about a courtesan who falls in love with a man, but she has tuberculosis and dies.
So it's Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, that's it. It's Moulin Rouge. Yeah. I was thinking, is it Pretty Woman? No. Yeah, it's Moulin Rouge. It's essentially that,
okay.
So anyway, she says, he's like, oh, it's not tuberculosis, but what you have, it doesn't have a name. So it's like, oh, okay, it's real bad there, Mike.
That, you don't like hearing a doctor say that.
But also, like, how much of is her memory is just being like, I don't know what it is, it doesn't matter, I'm dying.
Yeah.
He says, you're taking a lot of drugs, your liver's basically just starting to fail.
It's shot, yeah.
So... the servants are overhearing this, says, also your heart's failing, you're trying to sing. My opinion is you shouldn't start singing again. You shouldn't try to recapture that. It'll kill you. She's like, you know what? I just My mom made me sing, and then Onassis forbid me from singing. I just want to sing for myself. I want to dictate. I want to dictate the end.
Yeah.
And then the doctor says, "Oh, go ahead."
I guess when I was reading the whole like Onassis thing, in basically he wanted her as an object, and like in her scandals, she wasn't being like booked or whatever, and she allegedly left him. She claims that she left him because he was hounding her, but who knows?
Anyway, the doctor says, your voice will not return. It's in heaven and on a lot of records. She says, get out.
I love these fucking Paris doctors, man. Just like, your voice is in heaven and on records for millions of people to hear.
I can't imagine that now.
Also, the thing you're sick of, I have no name for.
This could be a hallucination too, but I'm so funny.
I like to believe this is the only real part of her hallucination. Is the floral language that the doctors use to describe symptoms be amazing?
Yeah.
So she goes to meet her little sister, who says, "I've come to Paris." And
this is why I think this is all a hallucination as well. Like,
it
goes very deep with the whole, like, this is the background, this is Onassis, this is that. And then it comes to this idea of, like, this is the final day of her life. This is the last day. And she sees the doctor, and then she sees her sister and has this scene. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the medicine being sent from her sister is either her doing some sort of trickery with the mail or something.
I mean, it could also be her sister, but her sister never meets her. You know,
that
could
too,
be something.
That too. That's true.
Because she says, you know, I regret giving you the medicine. She says, you look too thin. Maria seems happy about that. Maria says, last time I saw mom, she asked me for money. Sister also says, sometimes when you were crying, I took your place so you could rest back when we were kids. Do you remember? And I was like, now I know what that means. It was probably during the Nazi stuff, which I was like, oh, cool, fun. Maria then starts grabbing her arm, and then her sister's arm, she starts just saying, I'm hallucinating. I'm hallucinating. And I didn't know what extent that meant. I don't know if we were hallucinating too. I didn't know, but you know, I was just going along. I was just accepting what the movie was telling me. And at least she's honest now. And the sister says, I don't have any debt to pay for you. You know, I didn't write anything about your life. Whatever you did wrong, Maria, you're not to blame. You're really not to blame. And this, like, really brings a tear to Maria. Like, she probably has a lot of guilt probably from how she was, I assume, her sister and how she was treated earlier. I'm just assuming that because of the flashbacks that you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. And then the sister also says, forget the music. You're 53 years old. Forget the music and live. And then she leaves.
She disappears. She turns into a million butterflies.
Yeah, and I was like, is this a hallucination? I don't get it.
Yeah, no, that's totally a hallucination. It's totally like the road you could have taken, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Like the other, like at this point, she's given a path, even though it's like, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like she really has that much time, but whatever.
Yeah.
But what she does instead is she goes full into singing. She arrives to practice. She sings Anna Bolina, the mad scene, and she starts singing it. And we cut to her performing it back in the day when she was in front of a crowd. And we cut back and forth. And the thing that's tragic about this is, like, you see her back in the day hitting all the notes, and now you see her and her voice is just so... It's powerful, but also weak at the same time. It's a really good job.
She can't hit those high notes.
She can't hit those high notes. And it's her assistant's just there recording it with her recorder, just looking sad. And then when she finishes, she looks back, and her servant just says, you're magnificent. You were magnificent.
And what one thing Ethan didn't say was the lighting guy has keyed a reporter who is up in the lighting booth recording it.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't notice that. But yeah. I did notice at the end when she went out, a reporter ambushed her. And I was like, whoa, how'd they hear that through the walls? So that makes a lot of sense.
Got it. Okay. Fucking Pierre.
I know. A reporter ambushes her and says, hey.
I take it back. He's a heterosexual. No gay man would have done that to Maria.
That's very true. Because he comes up and says, hey, I was in there and I was listening to you and it sounded pretty terrible. Actually, it was pretty awful what you sound like. Can you give me your side of the story? And I'm just like, what a fucking asshole. And this guy's out here taking pictures. Like, you got the whole press out here. And she's just mad. She's like, and then the servant, the butler comes out and he like shakes the reporter. I was like, get out of here. Get the heck out of here. And he says,
it's great. He comes for her. He like stands up for her and like
he stands up
pushes
for her.
Him. And doesn't he like try to break the camera or like?
Yeah, he throws the camera or throws his paper on the ground, starts stomping on it or something because it's the report. Oh, he had a microphone. He was breaking that. He says, our readers want to know what the hell happened to you. And he says, let's just go home and they get out of there. And it's really like after this emotional scene with all this basically being accosted by a reporter, she then says, play the tape in the car. And I'm just like, man, she really is not going to like that. And luckily we don't have to hear it, but we all just kind of know, like, she's still got this one objective, even with what everyone else is saying. And then we cut to the kid, he's the film kid, and he's just, they're just arriving and walking in Paris. And he just admits, like, you know, have I told you I've fallen in love with you? And she's like, oh, that happens a lot. Get used to it. And then she says, the movie's
almost
over.
Get a line.
Right? Yeah. She says, the movie must be almost over. It must be the final scene. And he's like, yeah, we're pretty much almost done here. Yeah, exactly. And she says, well, there's something I want you to know. Get your equipment. He's like, I don't have any equipment right now. He's like, okay, well, remember this because no one else will know. When he was dying here, this is probably clearly made up by the actual director, but it's a fun thing. When Onassis was dying in Paris, I went to him. We cut to black and white. She walks up to Onassis, and immediately, while he's in the hospital bed dying, he says, "I love you." By the way, this hospital looks crazy. It's like a
Twin Peaks like David
it's
Lynch
very
style hospital.
Twin Peaks, David Lynch style hospital. Very like no one else is there, just a rich man in this like very so open space.
Oh my god! Yeah, okay.
Like it's funny because they have like curtains, but they're not privacy curtains. They're completely clear, and I'm like, why are these curtains here? It's incredible. So then, he says like, there's something I want you to know. I loved you. Also, I wanted to let you know that I also still hate opera. I think it sucks. He asks like, are you happy? And she's like, well, I just learned Frank Sinatra makes 10 times more than what I earn. And he's like, well, when it's your turn to die, will you come to Athens to see me? And she says, and then he admits like, I should never have tried stopping you singing. And then the nurse comes in and says, Mr. Onassis, your wife is here. And he just says to Maria directly, Athens, Maria. You and me, when I'm buried, I want you and me only to be there. So she still holds on to him. Mm-hmm. In whatever thought, I mean, this probably never happened, but she still holds on to him.
In the Broadway play Masterclass, sorry, Ethan.
Go ahead.
Which is all about her teaching a masterclass. There's two moments in the show where I saw it with Tyne Daly, if you can believe it. Does anyone know who Tyne Daly is?
No.
Like Carson Daly.
I saw Tyne Daly do it, and there's two moments in it where she just has this monologues where she just talks about Aristotle, Onassis, and loving him and how he tortured her. So like this is very in line with that, you know.
Mm.
So then cut back to the filmmaker, and the filmmaker says, you know, Jackie was his wife, but you were his life. And then she just goes back and sits in front of her recording at home. It just looks real sad for a while. And then she's...
So we don't fucking see Natalie Portman?
No. Sadly
I'm
not.
I'm pissed.
That would have been really funny if they brought her back for that.
This is the crossover we need.
Yeah. So they're all her and her servants are all playing cards. And, you know, they're joking. You know, one of them is saying, you know, the cook always wins and she cheats, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I think this part's sweet.
I like this part a lot. And then she says, you know, very similar to like, I don't know if you ever hung around people who are close to dying, but they always say like the most morbid shit or just even old people in general. And this very much felt like that where she's just like, everyone's having a good time and laughing and joking. And she just says, I hope you always stay together even after I'm gone. And, you know,
What a bitch. I love
the
it.
The butler tries to keep the good times rolling and says, like, well, it's going to be hard if she always keeps cheating.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I hope we really do stay together. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. And then once again, they are moving the piano the next day to the other room. And they knock on her door and say, like, hey, you know, clearly she's sad. Let's all order your favorite food. We're going to have a great big party tonight. And she's like, leave me alone. Go walk the dogs or something. So they go walk the dogs. And she's just in her bedroom, and she gets up from her bed and just starts singing and just belting. And this time nailing all her notes. Like, she's doing a really good job.
Yeah, and, like, this is – I mean, I just have to interrupt Ethan because he won't do it justice.
Wow.
It is.
Now, honey is about to sing the song.
No, it's like her in a dressing gown, and her hair is just big, and she's singing, and it's exactly what Ethan's saying. She's hitting all the notes.
I'm going to interrupt Ethan because he's not going to do it justice.
No,
she's exactly what Ethan is saying.
She's hitting all the notes. But it's, and I get what you're saying, maybe her lip. I find this scene to be fabulous.
This is the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, so go on. I'll let you do it.
You can fill in the blanks. You can fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
So she's singing in her bedroom, and she's having visions of the past. It's cutting the black and white. It's cutting back to her old self when she was nailing notes, when she was in front of the stage. And they always do this. This is the motif of this movie, is where she's in front of the stage of people, and this is another time where she's flashing back to being in front of the stage of people. But it's also flashing back to moments of color, and like those moments that were in the past are now melding with the current moments, and people actually start, like in real life, start standing outside of her apartment listening to her sing to herself. And then
yeah, she's
one by
opened
one,
all the like the doors and the windows.
Yeah, all the windows and everything. And one by one, like she sees people in her house. Onassis is there. He starts to fade away. She really is getting in the song, hitting even the higher notes. We see Mandrax in there, and he fades away, you know? And then she just like really just finishes and nails the song right in front of the open window, but far enough back where no one can really see her still. You know, like, I think this is a good reflection on the fact that, you know, no one does care about what she looks like. She's just, it's her voice that people care about.
And her the cook and the butler are coming back, and they're watching from outside.
Yeah, along with a bunch of other people.
Yeah, it's like a crowd of people have come.
Crowd.
And they're
all I think it's
watching.
Also another important note, too, is like, it doesn't sound like she can see anyone. She knows people are listening, but she can't see anyone watching her.
Yeah, she doesn't
know
the
audience. I don't even know if she knows people are listening. She's just doing it for herself at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But she still has an audience of people.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a very beautiful moment.
Yeah, it's exactly. A very beautiful moment.
And then she stops and she just goes, fuck. And then the two housemates, I've said housemates because at this point I'm like, they're no longer servants. They're roommates.
Because she's dead.
And the roommates come upstairs. And they're roommates to me now. They've upgraded. They're roommates. They're no longer servants in my eyes. And
so the besties arrive.
The besties arrive with the dogs, and she's on the floor dead. They don't say anything, and the butler just goes over, calls the doctor, and says, Bria Caius is dead. She's dead. And then he hangs up. And then all the puppies are sad. They're crying. They're crying. And then a bunch of people show up, and you know they got the white blanket over her, white sheet, and the two servants like kind of embrace each other, and they just say they believe it was heart failure, and then they walk over and look at the lounge where they always keep moving that damn table back or not the damn piano back and forth, and that's it. That's the end of the movie.
Wow.
And then we see real footage of her walking around being a diva, of the real Maria. And
she truly didn't give a fuck. I mean, obviously, Ethan, you got the harder part of the movie. And that was the whole thing is, you know, during the final scene, you just see her going, watermelon, cantaloupe, watermelon. Do you know that?
No.
When you're lip syncing, you don't know the words.
Oh, you say watermelon rhubarb. Watermelon rhubarb.
I'm just saying because you don't like her lip syncing. That's what she's doing.
Yeah.
But did you enjoy the movie?
You know, I liked a lot of parts of it, but in a moment it kind of feels like, and I think this is just kind of the way it was going for it, it feels like a lot of cool, sick lines that that a diva would say, strung together by kind of a thin narrative. Mm. And I don't know if it really comes across with anything new that we really haven't seen before and kind of in like kind of the past work. But that being said, I think this is probably the most clear directorial shots. The writing was also on point. I think Angelina Jolie was really amazing in this role. I just think in the end it didn't quite connect with me. And I think also because I just didn't see the first half. So it's hard to really establish things too. So I'm getting a bit of leeway. I didn't not like the movie. I thought it was good. But there were moments where I was a little bored. A little just like, all right, let's keep moving on here a little bit. But
I loved it. But good. I think it's also because I have a massive appreciation for opera. I've actually listened and watched a lot of opera. I love Carmen is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. So whenever fucking Carmen, that's probably why that scene where all the men are singing Torador at her or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this shit fucking rocks. This is the best shit in the world.
Yeah.
So I think I definitely got a lot out of it. I didn't know who this person was, but yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed it. It's pretty much on par with the other movies we've seen in this.
Yeah. I mean, he has a style. He has a point of view, and I'm curious to see what he's gonna do next now that the trio is done. I still think it is it's a fun little so here's the thing. Faye Dunaway.
it always comes back.
In 1994-ish, don't quote me, Terrence McNally, a famous playwright, gay icon, wrote this play called Masterclass about these alleged 1971 to 72 masterclass that Marie Callas held. And it was a great play. It starred Zoe Caldwell and a young Audra McDonald, won her one of her first Tonys. And it is this great play. And Faye Dunaway toured it in America and bought the rights to it and has held on to those rights for so long because she wanted to make the movie version of it, but it never happened and all this shit happened and she's a diva, you know. Yes. I need Angelina Jolie to get the rights to that and make the Masterclass movie so we can have another. God. Let's create. Pablo, are you listening? Let's expand the multiverse into the Masterclass universe because then the Oscars will come. Anyways, that's my review.
No, I agree with that.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I did enjoy the lines she said were really incredible all the time. I love the way she now that I know that Porter is invented too, that he wasn't a real person, not reporter, filmmaker. Having all the context did make me enjoy the film much more after hearing all about it. But I do think at moments there was something about I don't think it was as tight in the in keeping my attention as much as some of the other films, but you know, hey, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, the movie is doing like I said earlier, it's doing a lot more. The earlier movies are taking place over a much shorter amount of time. I what I found interesting about this movie, particularly with something like Jackie, where Jackie's a lot more sort of free. It feels more free floating in the way that the events are occurring, even though the events are occurring you know, pretty closely related. It's we're cutting to before the assassination, right after the assassination, a week after the assassination. Mm. It feels a bit more sort of jumbled on purpose. It's supposed to feel that way. Whereas this movie, although it's taking place over a longer amount of time and is occurring within someone whose mind is sort of going, I was kind of impressed how much control this director had over the visual element of the film. The fact that it starts out strict and very locked off, I said, and then as she starts to lose awareness of reality, he allows for his free-flowing feelings to actually take over throughout the rest of the film. I don't know, it's cool to see an artist with a very particular style actually holding back for a very long time until he allows the movie to become the dreamlike sequence that he
until
needs
it becomes
to,
the second half and I have to deal with what's going on and figure out
yes exactly
Yeah, true.
But yeah, no, thank you so much, honey, for coming with us, coming to us with this idea. This was genuinely a really wonderful time. It was, it was really cool learning like about these historical women, as well as just watching like good movies in
general. They're not bad movies. And I haven't seen Priscilla, but it's Sofia Coppola, makes a very well crafted, like, energy kind of movie that has a feeling and a style and a specific point of view that might not get like the awards it deserves, but they exist in time.
Well, I think what's so cool about it as well is even if you look at a movie like Elvis, like I compare him to Elvis because Elvis won the fucking Oscar. But like even that movie is not really doing the justice of the main character. It's actually like from the perspective of like the colonel, because it's really hard to get into the head of someone like that powerful and influential and important. And what I find really amazing about these movies that we've watched this month is they actually do attempt to get into the heads of these women and like really like wrestle with what they were dealing with as, you know, women who impacted the world, women who were around powerful men, women who didn't necessarily have a lot of choices in the way that they were able to live their lives. And I think that's what I find so amazing about these films is that they do try and in many ways successfully tackle something that is very difficult, which is getting in the head of another human being, especially in pretty much every case except for Priscilla. They weren't able to like talk to these people. they aren't able, you know, all these three women that this director has made, it's like you're getting to the heads of women who you can only speculate, basically. But I feel like they've done a very successful job of humanizing them without deifying them.
It's interesting. I was looking at the award nominations that it has gotten, and the cinematographer of Maria also did Carol, which if you haven't seen, we'll put it on the
list. Makes a lot of sense. We watched it for the podcast. Yeah. It makes a lot of
Carol,
sense.
Carol, Far From Heaven, and The Virgin Suicides.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I always like to cinematographers give them, you know, like when you make a movie that's stylized, that might not be like the greatest movie. I go to the cinematographer and I'm like, oh, that's why I enjoyed the flow of this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. And again, I was singing the praises of the film stock they were shooting on this fucking thing. And it was gorgeous. I'm assuming they really shot on film, too. Like,
yeah.
I could see a lot of like artifacts and stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you enjoyed the month.
It's been a great month. Thanks again for recommending these to us. We would recommend checking out Honeybees on Twitch. Honeybees, you want to shout out your Twitch stream?
I go by Not the Honeybees on Twitch. I play games. I fool with you. I make jokes. I watch Broadway. It's really an experience to do. And now that we've, you know, covered this historical figure, I'm going to go and continue my watch of Inland Empire. So follow me as Not the Honeybees on Blue Sky, where you'll get all the hottest takes on David Lynch's Inland Empire over the maybe next week or so. I have an hour left of the movie. No one knows what will happen.
We'll see. I remember one time Ethan was like, I want to go see Inland Empire with you. And he thought that we were going to go see Lost Highway. And then halfway through a 4-hour long movie, he realized we had watched the wrong movie.
I wasn't familiar with the game. You know what? That's fine. I learned something new that day.
That's fair. That's fair. You did.
And that's what Ethan thought he was watching. The other movie named Crash, about people who can't have sex unless they're in auto accidents. It's like, what's going on?
I love that movie. And if you enjoy listening to Honeybees, you also suggested another series
this
of
is
films.
The fourth
about...
time I've been here.
Yes, and
used to me.
I'm coming back.
I love having you on. If you want to listen to those episodes, what was that? It was the
Shelley Winter Wonderland.
Shelley Winter's Wonderland,
and then you can find him. Towering Inferno.
Towering Inferno,
and
yes.
Then the Barbra Streisand's on the beach.
Oh, yeah, it's Streisand on the Beach. If you want to listen to any of those episodes, you can find them on any podcatching app. And while you're there, please leave a 5-star rating and review. We will read it in the show, no matter what it says, even if we have to sing it in opera voice, or at least lip-sync it in opera voice. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can also find us on Blue Sky, as well as Instagram, Facebook, and you can also find us on Discord. And Ethan's on Twitch as well, which you can find on Discord. Thanks again, Honeybees. This has been a really wonderful month. We really appreciate you coming on here. You're always a joy to have.
It's a pleasure. I was actually feeling very low energy, and I had a really nice time.
Oh, that means a lot. Thank you so much.
Couldn't tell.
Well, after this, you're going to be taking a bunch of Quaaludes.
Yeah,
we're really. I'm the butler. Ethan's the cook. We're here for you.
Happy Women's History Month, baby.
Good night, everybody. Would you guys like to discuss the movies that we talked about on the podcast, recommend movies for future episodes, or maybe even watch movies with us? Check out the Discord.
You can find the Discord on the latest episodes or on the website, theotherhalfpodcast.com. We're just hanging out chatting.
And while you're there, maybe also check out the second of the Discord, which is specifically for Ethan's streams on Twitch. You get updates as to when he goes live. Just keep up to date with us, with Ethan, the podcast, and the stream.
It's also totally okay if you just want to hang out and talk about the podcast. You could hang out there and maybe we'll see you there and watch a movie or something.
Or maybe you're like, wow, these streams are so much better and you just totally ignore the podcast. That's also another option.
That could happen.
Why not?
The Discord is your oyster. Come join us.
The Discord is your oyster. Join it.